back to Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
And that'll do it. 12 consecutive wins in this series for the Patriots against the Jets. Another season sweep of the Jets, and they do it in convincing fashion. 54-13.
The path is laid, but you gotta show up week in, week out. I don't care what happened yesterday, last week, none of that. Show up today. That's what it's about. One object today to dominate, fellas. Let's go dominate on three. One, two, three. Dominate.
Blood alone moves the wheels of history.
That's Devin McCourty getting everybody all riled up and ready to go.
Hour two,
Gresh and Keefe, 11:03, and McCourty got dinged up in that game. We'll get to that coming up. But Patriots crushed the Jets yesterday, 54-13. Yes, we know it's the Jets. However, faith a little restored in this team. Like how the mind screws continue. The Red Sox took us on all kinds of roller coaster rides and ended up in the American League Championship Series. Hell, we thought they weren't going to get there. Then they get there. Then they go to the ALCS and almost go to the World Series. And this Patriots team, it's kind of like there's the mind screw too. Like you don't know what to make of the defense. They played well against Tampa. You see this today.
How I would look at it. And tell me if you agree with this. It's as good as you can feel about a win over the Jets.
Totally agree.
Because it comes with that sort of caveat we were joking about in the, you know, yeah, I know it's a preseason game, but it's like, all right, so it's higher than that. It's elevated than that. It was a real game that really counted. But there's five teams right now in the NFL that if anybody beats them, they're not going to get a lot of credit, right? The Lions, the Jets, Dolphins, Texans, Jaguars. If you beat one of those five teams, it's like whoopee-doo. But if you go out there and just wire-to-wire dominate and it isn't the man, how'd you play that close with the Texans? You really let Davis Mills move the ball up and down the field? Like, nope. Just went out there and dominated. And the Patriots were in desperate need for a home win. They hadn't had one yet this year.
Yeah, that's
they
very, got that. Very much underplayed this morning is that people are almost like,
So I look at it as sort of a check mark. And it's like, okay, going into the weekend, we thought, all right, we're going to start the show Monday. They're going to be 3-4. But what does that win look like? Is it scraping by? I feared it might be one of those 10 to 14 point wins where you're like, yeah, they had it, but like this and this didn't really go their way. This was a dumb decision. This was like they cleaned up. Think about all the nonsense from last week even, which was a close game against a good team. But it was, you had a punt get blocked. You had a delay a game. One guy didn't know how to line up on the line of scrimmage. One guy didn't know to go in motion. You're like, is this team even well coached? Like, we're not saying that if anything, you might be like, are they a little overcoached with all the trick plays that they had to run out there?
You know, it's interesting. That got brought up to me on TV last night, and I went back to the Charlie Weiss days and thought about what was it like with Charlie.
Yeah.
And there was one consistent criticism from fans and media about Charlie Weiss, and it was you run too many gimmicks. And that's what it felt like yesterday, where you went to the second trick play, and it was like, okay, did you really need to go there? Now, there is the, we're going to put it on film so that we know we can get another one down the road. And I'm not anti-trick play, don't get me wrong, but that's what it, for those who remember the Charlie Weiss years.
Yeah,
It became too gimmicky at times, and that was really at a time where you had Corey Dillon, you could pound the rock, you know, 1,600 yard back.
Right.
What are we doing running, you know, 52 skidoo?
Oop-de-oop.
Right?
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we don't need
what are we doing here? We don't need Statue of Liberty plays or anything like that.
It just seems like when you're up that big, because I am not opposed to the trick play, but I also think it is, you know, the offense is kind of struggling to move the ball a little bit in a playoff game against the Ravens, and you decide to have the old wide receiver pass. Like, that is huge. Like, you needed that play. It was dialed up perfectly. It was executed perfectly. You're up multiple scores, and you're still running some of the stuff against the Jets. You're like, I don't know, maybe save it.
You're getting it on film is what you're doing.
You are, and, like, I guess for better or worse, right? So now the Chargers have to, like, prepare for it, but also now the Chargers are prepared for it. So I didn't think they needed to do a lot of it. Like the Kendrick Bourne pass, great. Like at that time of the game, go for it. Like you want to try that one out. Now you have multiple receivers who can throw the ball. Although I don't know if Bourne necessarily is going to be become a quarterback anytime soon with that arm, but whatever, he got it out there.
What I love about that play was they made the motion so that Bourne could continue to sell the fake like he's going to run it. He was basically running towards the line of scrimmage before he did it. And when you think of, you know, the Edel pass or the Amendola pass, or even remember the one in Indianapolis with David Patton, right?
Yeah.
He was stationary, took the step back, and then threw it. This one felt like a little more of a modern kind of trick play because you were still baiting the defender with Bourne's ability to be able to run towards the line of scrimmage. And then you're right, the throw wasn't great, but even Nelson Agholor couldn't drop that one.
No, he didn't.
So here's some of the numbers from yesterday in terms of the, have they restored some faith? Has our faith restored a little bit? Could we feel good, as you said, feel as good as you can about a victory over the Jets? 32 first downs yesterday for the Patriots.
Just up and down the field.
32. Yeah. That is an enormous number. 551 total yards on 74 offensive plays. Now, we knew what it was like with Dallas, and even though that game went to overtime, Dallas ran 89 plays, and the Patriots' defensive tongues were dragging on the ground at the end of that game.
Yeah.
So offensively, you get to the point to where you actually run 74 offensive plays, and sneaky number that I'm very excited about, 7-for-12 on third down.
Yeah, third down conversions were huge because – I think it's just like another step with this team too, right?
That's what
like
this
something
is.
That Matt can do. And what was interesting too is this game, they threw the ball a lot on first down because you know how Bill will always do the first down offense is as important as third down because therefore your third down. There wasn't a ton of third and shorts, and yet they still were able to convert all of these,
right?
You know,
and that is very true. Your success on first down leads to success on third down,
of course.
And they cleaned up the penalties. But also, the offensive line looked great. And I know we talked to Ted Karras last hour, and we're going to talk with Lawrence Guy coming up in 20 minutes here on Patriots Monday with Gresham Keefe. But it really stood out yesterday. And I don't want to just say, well, it's as easy as moving Mike Onwenu to right tackle. But good Lord, that right side of the offensive line at times, they were crushing in the run game. Ted Karras told us last hour he was excited. They on double teams, they were really good. If you go back to that Dallas game, Damian Harris's rushing touchdown, it's Ted Karras who is working with Andrews at the first level and then up on the linebacker. But this group looked, and again, Jets, good D-line. Mm-hmm. You can't poo-poo the Jets defense completely. This O-line looked as good as it has all season.
Yeah, no, it has. And Tom Curran, we'll talk to him later in the week, but he did something on Twitter talking about he kind of graphed the runs in the like by the center and the guard. Like they're specifically running kind of up the middle more. I think they have a little bit more faith in those guys kind of pushing the pile than, and that probably has a lot to do with Isaiah Wynn, who again is probably the most disappointing of the offensive linemen
we've
had this year.
I think basically with the way that a lot of teams have gone to the two interior defensive linemen, You're almost at the point to where if you're, you know, whatever tackle's covered, that guy's got basically a wall block, a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But everybody else would have the ability to, in theory, double team at the point of attack or at least get one double team to where if you're Damian Harris, what's the one thing Damian Harris is really good at? He's not a toss runner. He's a north-south guy.
And he looked fast yesterday, didn't he?
He did,
He looked like a step faster than he had. And it was one of those games where they didn't need it, and it wasn't necessary, but he could have ran for 200 against them. And that's like how it felt anyway, because I think he finished just 14 carries for a 106. He had that 32-yard run in there, but a couple of touchdowns, and they stopped him, like the Patriots did.
Oh,
the Jets had nothing to do with
slowing him down. I mean, J.J. Taylor got two garbage touchdowns in the fourth quarter where it's like, I mean, if you're him, who knows if there's an incentive.
Like, I can't be active for this game. The game we scored 54 and we're just spreading it around and we're
too
throwing
easy.
The ball to Jakob Johnson. I can't be out there.
Too easy. Can't
That's
put
true.
The kid out there. You got to make him go through the strife and the strain
That's
if he
true.
Wants to be a number one running back. But that is something that did kind of catch us off guard a little bit yesterday during NFL Sunday is at 11:30 when the injury report came out or the inactives came
out.
There was no Ramondre Stevenson.
Nope, no Ramondre Stevenson. So it seems like that shuffle is going to kind of continue just a little bit. Now you have to wait. J.J. Taylor, if he either fumbles or misses a block, then Stevenson's back in until he fumbles or misses a block, and then I think that rotation is going to continue.
I do think with the way they played offense yesterday, though, it did sort of take away the element of the running backs needing to block in critical situations.
Yeah, it didn't really.
And you had mentioned about the third downs, and I know we highlighted 7-for-12 on third down, but I'd have to go back and maybe watch it again today where I can actually, like, you know, close my eyes for 30 minutes and then open them again and actually be able to think. But I don't remember a play in that game yesterday where I thought, oh, boy, the running backs are putting Mac Jones in peril. Or, boy, that running back didn't know which way to go on that blitz and how to pick it up. I think because the score got so out of whack so quickly that it kind of took that element out of the game where he didn't have to worry about the running backs getting steamrolled by some blitzing linebacker.
No, I mean, it just seemed like pretty much whatever they wanted to do kind of worked for them, you know, like they just had everything kind of going in the way that they needed it to, and therefore they weren't really challenged much.
Ketchus Law Group injury report. It is time for our Patriots Monday injury review, and there were a couple players who left the game yesterday. One you heard from in Devin McCourty, who did leave yesterday's game. Jonnu Smith had a great first quarter.
He had two big catches, and he was looking like he was going to have the best game of his Patriot career anyway. That's the way it started.
That's right.
Then, done.
Done. So yeah. I think he left at halftime. So did McCourty. They ruled him out as well. And I don't know if you've heard this before, Keith, but Harvey Lange's a good story.
Love the story.
As told by Chris Schein.
Yep, I know it is.
Harvey Lange, the good story, he ends up leaving yesterday's game as well. And
Hightower didn't play.
Well, there you go.
Hightower, and he was in and out of practice during the week, and then we found out, again, during inactives that, they didn't need him yesterday, but just another thing to keep an eye on.
And we kind of clowned yesterday a little bit that, okay, if you're going to sit somebody down and get him a week of rest, if you're doing
Jets
load.
Week, you can.
Yeah, yep. This was a load management week for Bill Belichick if he wanted to or needed to with certain guys, and maybe Hightower qualifies as that. With offices across New England, Ketchus Law Group has won over $1 billion for their injured clients since 1986. At Ketchus, you pay nothing unless they win. Injured, get a free legal evaluation at ketchuslaw.com or call 508-321-7000. 617-779-7937. Steven is in North Carolina talking football aggression. Keith, go ahead, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Love the show.
Thanks.
Hey, so I was thinking about, as far as the offensive line played awesome yesterday, and it does start from offensive line out, and you see where they all click on that way. But my biggest thing that I was looking at is if Trent Brown comes back healthy, the way Wynn is playing, he's the weak spot in my book, the biggest right now. Why don't we put him at left tackle? You have Wynn as your swing. I know they're paying him, but, I mean, when we went to the Super Bowl, Trent Brown had that left tackle spot down. What do you guys think about that for the offensive line?
Yeah, I think if you're just grading out all the offensive linemen, Wynn is not one of your five best. But again, somebody's always going to get hurt. Somebody's going to be not available. He's still going to play. But
he's not going to be a rotational guy. That they're not going to make him they're not going to put him in the role that Justin Herron is in right now.
No, probably not. But he hasn't played a ton of guard. Right,
no,
like they drafted him, and they're like, you're a tackle.
Like,
he has played tackle, and so.
But I know they reserve their right to be able to move him, and I got to say, when yesterday, I thought he was really good in the running game. I mean, he was at times dominant, so I think for a part of yesterday, you got good Isaiah Wynn, but to think that they picked up the option on this guy, and then.
I know. I mean,
they're dug in on playing this guy because they really believe in him, and not for nothing, he is one of their five most talented offensive linemen. If you're going by just guys who play and have talent, he should be one of the five in there. But maybe I keep trying to figure this out, Keith. I don't know why they seem to be resistant to move him inside. I would think that it would be natural for him.
First round pick, maybe?
Well, I mean, like, they've had first-round picks who played a guard before.
Logan
Mankins
was the best guard of all time.
Well, that is
or
true.
One of them.
He was one of them. And normally they find those dudes. But, to me, it's about – honestly, I think there would be a better chance Trent Brown would be the swing. And you
Well, that's
would,
the thing is I don't know what you're going to get out of him or when he's even going to return.
That's the big thing, isn't
and
it?
And then he just like, all right, another injury waiting to happen kind of thing. So that's sort of the concern because – And are they worried about that? They're like, hey, Isaiah, you're going to kick inside. Next series, you're back outside. And he's like, what the hell? Because that
that is looked at as a demotion. Like, if you're the starting left tackle,
yeah,
and now all of a sudden, well, you're playing guard or you're not in the series, like, I wonder how he handles that.
You would hope that it wouldn't be taken the way it would be in other organizations, yeah, only because you have so many pieces that you move around on this offensive line. But it will be interesting. Let's put it this way. If Ted Karras can stay in that left guard spot, you keep on Wenu at right tackle.
Yeah.
You don't have to rush Trent Brown back. You can take your sweet-ass time with it and then be one of those, oh, we have an injury or another guard got dinged up. All right, move Teddy over. Bing, here we go. Let's bring in Brown.
Speaking of, Shaq Mason aggravated his abdomen again during the game. So add that to the pile. Like, yeah. I think that's going to be an ongoing thing throughout the year.
It's amazing how largos can pull an ab muscle like
that. They're in there, though. Come on.
Well, they are, but they're layered.
I don't know how you hurt that, but here we are.
Maybe you got
ab injuries all over the place. These guys aren't doing their crunches?
Oh, no.
Aren't you doing crunches and, like, the bicycle thing?
Aren't crunches, haven't they been determined that they're not good for you?
I think it's like a butter margarine thing. I think it changes every day. I think
of all the things to compare it to, butter and margarine.
Let's go to our crunches expert desk with our very own Chris Scheim. Scheim, are crunches a useful exercise?
I believe they are. Okay. They're excellent core workouts.
There you go. Thank you, Scheim.
The only thing he knows about crunch are the bars and the bunch of crunches in the box. You tried
crunch
those?
Bunch of crunch is one of my all-time favorite
my
theater
snacks.
My kid,
too. He loves it.
Bunch of crunch is good. Remember the, were they dips? What were they called? Those, like, they were like the ice cream that was covered. They were like mini little Klondike bars almost. You'd like get it. Dibs. No, not dips. Dibs. Remember those?
Dibs? Yeah.
And then like the crunch flavor of it. Oh, Gresh, you're not living
Look
if they
it
have
up.
Dibs.
I just Googled. Of course, I went
dibs
to.
Dibs will change your mind. Now, I don't know if they make them
I
anymore.
Went to Dibs and a Kelsey Ballerini song popped
Look
up.
At these.
Well, so there's.
Look at these. Dibs crunch. And like, so you just put, you got a whole bucket of them and you just fire them
You
down.
Know what that is? That I think that's the Nestle answer to the bonbon.
Could be.
Bonbons, little ice cream nuggets, normally eaten by rich people because they're wicked expensive, but I think the dibs would be the common man version.
I like
version
the caviar flavor myself.
So another update on the crunches for you. There's so many different kind of crunches that there's some that are most effective and some that are the least effective ab workouts.
Oh, you're back to the workout. I was trying to follow you on the snacks, but
oh, sorry, my apologies. No, the traditional crunch
there's full on sit ups. I'm not talking about sit ups.
No. There's different crunches. So the traditional crunch and the long arm crunch, the less effective version of the crunch.
So don't long arm it.
Correct. Whereas the vertical leg crunch and the reverse crunch, both most effective for
I do
workouts.
Enjoy a reverse crunch.
Right?
Thank you, Captain Crunch, for breaking that down for us.
Crunch berries for everyone.
Talk about a terrible cereal.
Crunch berries? Yeah, not my favorite.
Crunch, period.
Oh, Crunch?
Captain Crunch?
Oh, yeah. I think.
I don't want the skin hanging off the roof of my mouth where I'm playing with my tongue all day.
It's true. Who does the bit on that? Somebody does a bit on that. I forget if it was Dane Cook or somebody. Just like, it's so true, though. It ruins the top of your mouth.
You can't eat even. And you got to let it get soggy and milk. It's not worth it.
No, it really is poorly made.
I'm with you on that. Ron in Medford with Gresh and Keefe talking about crunches. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good.
I just wanted to call and say, I just think that, you know, from what I've heard from the media, it sounds like people are really disappointed that, you know, these tight games, close games with Dallas and Tampa, you know, everyone's asking when are we going to see them win one of these tough, tight games. And I just think it's asking too much. I mean, you know, Jones is a rookie. These free agents that are relatively young are almost essentially rookies as well. They're learning a new system, new way of doing things. And I think this team's way ahead of schedule. I mean, you took two of the best teams in the NFL to overtime and down to the last second field goal. I just think what they've done, I think this year they'll end up 500 team. I just think next year they'll be a lot better, and maybe in year three they're seriously contending. I mean, I think they're far ahead of where I would have thought they would have been. You know?
Well, yeah, Ron, and I'll kind of agree and disagree. I think Mac Jones is further ahead than a lot of people thought, but I don't think the team is further ahead. Now, they played really close games against the Bucs and the Cowboys. I don't think people are losing their minds about those games. I think they're losing their minds about the Dolphins game, and even at the time that felt like one they should have won, and then now as the season has gone on, you're like, oh my god, It's one of the worst teams in football, and you couldn't beat them. And then the Texans game was a frustrating win because you barely eked past Davis Mills. I think in that regard, like, Mac Jones is sort of, it's almost two different questions, right? Like, there's the team over here where I think some of their new guys have underperformed, like Jonnu Smith and Jalen Mills. Even, like, the return of Van Noy has been kind of up and down, and he's been hurt a little bit. Mac Jones is further along, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like 3-4 based on the schedule that they have had is really great.
No, and I think the fact that they played up against Dallas and Tampa, you look at Houston, I wonder if we're going to look back at that Houston game and be like, okay, a part of that was the coming down from the Brady game,
yeah, maybe,
the week before. And that Miami game, we are going to, that one's going to stick in the minds of Patriot
fans.
You led
the show with it today.
For
yeah.
years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, again, it changes everything. If they're 4-3 versus 3-4, yeah, we have a whole different feel about this football team and it doesn't mean that they're, like, that's the thing. They have not been wagging. Even New Orleans, where, 28-13 was the final, but they didn't get blown out. Like, they were in that game in the fourth quarter.
They had an opportunity. They were down one score, and their defense couldn't get off the field. Like, that was one where I think the defense let them down. There's a Taysom Hill drive all the way down the field.
Mm.
That one's frustrating, but again, that to me is one of those 50-50 games where you're not going to win them all, but you better not lose them all. And they have a bunch of those coming up on this slate. But I hope after, so they have, what is it, 6 games and then the bye week. It's a late bye week. I hope we're still talking about the Miami game during the bye week.
I agree.
Meaning that it's a loss. Because if they lose 4 of these next 6, it won't matter. The Miami game won't matter anymore. But if they win 4 of the next 6, or even, probably going to have to win 4 of the next 6, then we're definitely going to be talking about that game.
And I do think there are some media people out there who have moved the goalpost as we've moved along, because Mac Jones is not a problem. And I do think for some fans, it was, as long as Mac isn't a problem, you should still be okay this season, which they should be. Because I think it's pretty easy to see that Mac can play, and it's just a matter of whether you're going to admit it or not. We've had 7 games to talk about. We have not started one show with Mac sucked and looked like a rookie.
Nope.
In fact, it's been the polar opposite in many ways. We see on the phones, we are scheduled to be joined by Lawrence Guy coming up at 11:30 here on this Patriots Monday. Right now, Captain Crunch is ready to trend.
We're back to Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Patriots. Pretty good yesterday. They also did a very good job of stopping the run to the Patriots defense, and a big part of that joins Gresh and Keefe now on the Harbor One Hotline. It is our friend Lawrence Guy. Lawrence is brought to us by Marine Home Center, your local Anderson window dealer. I bet that felt good yesterday, Lawrence Guy. Good morning.
Good morning. Just enough time, you know. Those are the wins that you just can't wish to have, and when you do, like the way it ended, the score and everything, it's just exciting. And I know it came just in time. You know, those down games were there, and you know, coming in at a home stadium with Richard Seymour coming in, getting his red jacket. It was a great experience that day.
Is there anything better for a defensive line than some of those 4th-and-1 stops where you know the opponent is going to run and you just need to stop it and you're able to do it?
Oh, it's amazing. Like, when you go back, you're like, in your head, you're like, hey, did you not see the Dallas game? Like, it's 4th-and-1, you know. We're stopping them right now. But it's one of those things that when you know what's going to happen, most of the time, everybody knows it's up front. Like, hey, it's run. It's run to y'all as possible to everybody else. But for you guys up front, you got your hand in there, you're playing run, you play as hard as you can, and this is man on man. Who's going to win that battle?
Lawrence Guy of the New England Patriots here with Gresh and Keefe on Patriots Monday on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. I know that you had a couple of tackles on, I don't even think you played half of the defensive snaps. I don't want to say an NFL game is like a day off, but when the score starts to get tilted a little bit, how does things change for you up front, if at all?
And that's all a coaching decision. than the Beyond Fish U. But when it's not tilted, they pretty much just pull me out towards the end. They're like, hey, yeah, we just want to pull you out here. But you see, I saw every special thing that they wear that I could be on. It's out there on the fastest, out there on every field goal. But it is sometimes the coach is like, hey, man, you know, we just want to sit you out, the score's ahead, or it's something like, hey, man, we'll keep you in doing this. But with my decision, I'll be out there every single play, you know that. You know, it's not that decision I could control, but those are one of those is like you just have an understanding. You know, all you can do is tell your teammates and still make corrections on the sideline on what could be done or the plays that are hurting us or the formations or the sets that they were getting.
Lawrence, when it's halftime and you guys are up 31-7, what kind of message is it? Just more of the, hey, keep doing what you're doing? Because I would imagine it's so different from, you know, a halftime where maybe the game's tied or maybe it's just a one-possession score and there's certain things that you need to change in order to get the advantage. When you're up so big, what typically is the halftime message like?
It's, hey, these are the plays that hurt us in the first half. They're there, and the score is 0-0. Even like, if you're down, the score is 0-0. The game's tied, you have to understand. The new half is like the new start of the game. It doesn't matter what the score is or how it reflects. You just got to understand, like, if it's start of a new game, somebody's going to get the ball started off. We got to go down and do what we got to do. And you saw it, like, we're on defense the second half, so we have to understand, like, hey, we're starting the game on the second half. We got to go out there and eliminate the big plays, and we got to set the tone. And that's pretty much how you look at every halftime. What plays hurt us in the first half? What do we need to adjust, and when do you go out there and set the tone?
Lawrence, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it. Joining us here on Patriots Monday. Have a good week, and I think we'll be talking to you next week off a red eye, maybe.
Yeah. Ain't that going to be exciting?
Yes, it is.
We have all these movies and TV shows to talk about. I'll have like 5 or 6 hours to just binge watch.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're going to have to pick out a couple of shows. Have you watched Dune, Lawrence? I think you might like Dune.
Dune. I heard it was good. So
that's good.
I'm going to have to knock that out and Sweet Tooth.
Oh, yeah, Sweet Tooth's not bad. I like Sweet Tooth. Yeah, there you go.
See, the way you say it's not bad, I mean, it's not good.
No, it was good. It was good. So, I mean, if you want to go real deep dive dork stuff, people who read the comic didn't like the show. I never read the comic, so I actually liked the show. So I didn't know any different.
See, I'm not going to read the comic now because I want to like the show.
There you go. All right.
I thought, Lawrence, I thought you were going Sweet Tooth. We were about to go down the road of Halloween candy like Mike Leach.
Oh, by the way.
Very anti-candy corn.
I meant to, I should have, I'm glad you reminded me, Gresh.
thank you.
Confirmed.
Yes.
Lawrence, do you, the wife, the kids, you have Halloween costumes picked out yet? Do you know what you're going to do?
We do. But I got told specific orders. Do not tell people the Halloween costume. But someone will steal my idea. I'm not like, I got you.
So it's secret. All right, you'll have to tell us next week then. Yeah, all right.
Will there be any Halloween party, roller skating rink, Bill Belichick dressed as a pirate like when Randy Moss was here? Do we have anything like that going on this year, Lawrence?
If it wasn't a pandemic, maybe. But because it's still a pandemic, we still got to keep people safe. So that aspect is kind of dying. You know, you can't do that. But you never know about next year. You know, if everything's back to normal, the race are down, we ain't really concerned about what's going on. We'll see. Okay. The pirate might come back out.
There we go. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week, man. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon. There we go. There goes Lawrence Guy with us on the Harbor One hotline.
What do you think his costume is? He can't tell anybody.
Well, I think
super
that might be the key takeaway of the week, brought to you by the Dan O'Brien Auto Group. Come into any Dan O'Brien Auto Group store today and get your awesome protection plan, keeping it awesome. What should he go as a Halloween costume? He's a large human.
I'm guessing the most popular Halloween costume, and it's a show that Lawrence talked about last week, that I haven't finished yet. I'm halfway through Squid Game on Netflix.
Okay.
Super popular. Also, it's a pretty easy costume. You can do one of two different kind of characters. Everybody's either in like a jumpsuit, like a green jumpsuit with white shoes, or basically like this reddish kind of like zip up like hazmat suit with like a face mask. One of the two, I'm sure it's easily to pull off.
I think my wife has one of those hazmat suits just laying around.
Like a big, is it yellow?
No, I think it's a white one.
Oh, a white one.
Well, because when she goes,
what?
She gets attacked by bugs in the summer all the time, and we have like the mosquito squad come out and spray it.
So
but
she
still,
dresses up with
like
that.
If she's near poison oak or a bee or something
sumac.
Like that, it's all. I mean, she
they come after her.
It's unbelievable. It really. I think she's made of sugar because these bugs like swarm, and nice. She'll be like, "Look at my leg," and I'll see all these bites. She's like, "I gotta go inside."
So you got.
So she
big,
actually yeah. bought a like a smart. Hazmat suit to be able to go out and like cut stuff in the yard or whatever.
Pretty good.
I'm just
a bug baffler.
Just
call
ask
it,
the guy, and he could do it.
He
you
could
know,
take care
and,
of it. But yeah. you just never know. You don't want to be dealing with all those bites.
No, God no.
Terrible.
And the more miserable she is, guess who that flows downhill to? Me. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who's got to hear it. I'm itchy. I hate the bugs. I don't know all that
now
stuff.
Mosquito heat.
Well, I do have mosquito heat. That's right. I had dwarf heat. Now it's the mosquito. But I got to tell you, man, for somebody who admittedly has a pretty cool backyard.
Yeah.
That like the mosquito people that come in with those Ghostbusters
wipe them
packs
out, huh?
And
works. You swear by it?
I swear by it.
Okay.
I even went from every 3 weeks, every 2 weeks. It's so good.
So is it good for like if you have you have a dog?
Yeah.
Like, dogs and kids can play out
totally
there. And it's fine. Okay.
You got to wait a half hour after the spraying,
okay.
but otherwise it's
get
good.
Get out there and get
and
out.
The dog has run out there afterwards. He hasn't grown a third head or.
That'd be what I'd be worried
yeah,
about.
Yeah, okay. he hasn't yeah, found good. Like Shime's frog. There's no extra nipples or anything like that.
I gotcha.
No, it's totally good. But yeah. I can't reckon it. Seriously, it has changed the way we use our backyard. Like you can just. You can roll out on a hot day, shirtless, shooting basketball.
Roll
no,
around
no
the grass.
Bug bites. Yes! Yeah. Like a dog. Absolutely. That'd be Shime.
Right. That's a good idea.
Because we have a fence around. You can't get near a tree. So Shimey would have to like go on the other side of the fence and roll around.
Scratch his back like
scratch
a bear.
His back. And yeah. Yep, absolutely.
That's pretty good.
How about a guy who has been a bear on the NFL for well over 20 years? He threw his 600th touchdown pass yesterday. That'd be Tom Brady.
Brady motion left to right. We move right to left. Here's Brady's pass. Quad ball. Touchdown, Mike Evans. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Fire the cannons. Where are you?
That's a great catch, and now it's the 600.
Now he's mad at the cannon guy. He's all fired up.
What are you doing?
Guy, where are you? Fall asleep?
Have a step behind?
The guy's like, I just want to make sure it's a touchdown before I fire this thing off. We got to reload him.
That
so.
Was Gene Deckerhoff on the radio call of Tom Brady 600. I mean, so did you? I don't know if you were watching the game yesterday.
No, I wasn't watching it live.
So I happened to have it on, and they went to. Here is the 600 club in other sports, right? So I think it's 20 NHL players. Who've gotten to 600.
Okay.
There's, I think it's 9 on the all-time home run list at 600.
Sounds
and then there's
right.
like Brady. And and like when you put it in the context of that and you think of like globally in terms of him being a sports icon and getting to this number, like 600. It's just stupid. And the guy... Like Keith.
No, I mean it's too many.
What's it's too many.
It's too many.
You're
too
out
many
now.
Just stop. Stop rubbing it in. No, it is so much. Now again, like baseball stats were way more romanticized and everybody knew yep. like what that meant. Like 500, for example, meant a lot in baseball. At least it did for a time in home
right.
runs.
Thank you, Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah, screw with that for everybody. But in football. You don't really know what's a good number. Like prior to this, or I'm sure people that didn't follow Tom Brady, if you just asked a random football fan, like who has the most touchdown passes and how many, like you might get like, you're like, oh, probably Peyton Manning or Favre or Brady or Breeze, but how many, nobody really knows. And then you hear 600 and then you start doing the math on it. You're like, all right, so how many a year? Like if anybody's going to break this record, how many a year and how many years are they going to have to play?
It won't get broken.
You don't think so?
No.
See, I do.
Even with some years of guys having 50 touchdowns, the reason Brady got to this number was because of his consistency deep into his career. And even Aaron Rodgers, right now Rodgers sat a much longer period of time than Brady did before he got in there. But Rodgers would, I mean, have to play, I think, for another decade. Because, by the way, this fool ain't stopping.
No, good point.
Like Brady,
yeah, he's not done at 600.
Brady might get, now, if he says, okay, I'm going to play one extra year after 40. If Brady plays an age 46 season, he can get to 700. Hell, he'll be at 650 by the time he retires at the end of next year.
Yeah.
And he's got 21
right now.
I guess
at that point.
So he's on pace for 51, right? So Brady throws 30 more this year, and then he throws 50 again next year. You're talking to, he's going to be.
Yeah, that's true. That's hard to envision. Because it's easier to throw him now. Yep. And guys do play longer now. But you got to wonder, with their contracts, who's going to really want to play for 20 years?
Well, that's a very, you know? Very good point.
They might even 15. But 15 is a great. I'm trying to think. If you play 15 years and average 35 a year, that still only gets you to 525.
Right.
Because I'm thinking guys like Herbert or, you know, these like Joe Burrow, like if these guys play a super long time and are just constantly in the 30s, whereas Brady wasn't always. Brady would have a 20. His rookie year is like 18. So, like, there's, or his, not his rookie year, but his first year.
Well, but his, remember, Brady had 2 years off because 08 was a total wash.
Yeah, he didn't start right away, and he was out in 08.
That's right. So, essentially,
and then he got popped 4 games for.
There was that. And then he came back with quite a vengeance.
But still, but, like, no other injuries. And think about these other guys that miss games. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe, because I always envision most of these passing records going down. But the longevity thing is hard to overlook.
Completely agree with you. Coming up, we will touch on the Boston Bruins, and it was a bit of a sad day yesterday here at WEEI. We'll tell you all about it next.
Wherever you're working from, Gresh and Keefe go where you do. Download the Odyssey app or ask your smart speaker to play WEEI.
Second here for us to share some news with you. It's a sad day for all of us at NBC Sports, as we learned this weekend that a longtime member of our family passed away. Bob Neumeier was a fixture for decades on the New England sports scene. Neumi was also a reporter in the early days of this program. He covered track and field at the Olympics for us, but the Syracuse alum was truly in his element as a staple of our Triple Crown and horse racing coverage. Quick with a pick and a quip, Bob brought all of us so many laughs. He passed away peacefully at home with his wife, Michelle, by his side. We'll all miss Neumi, Bob Neumeier, who was 70 years old.
That was from last night's halftime of the Sunday night football game, the words of Mike Tirico. Of course, at one point in time, in this very time slot, by the way, the great Bob Neumeier once roamed as only Neumi can, and you heard Mike Tirico there. 70 years old in the passing of Bob Neumeier. Did you know him well? What was your interaction with Neumi?
So I only worked with him a couple of times over at NBC Sports Boston, and it was definitely one of those guys who I was like, wow, that's Bob Neumeier. Because just as a kid growing up and watching all the Boston sports and or news channels, because think about how important that position was for so many years when you didn't have, especially I grew up where, it took me forever to even get like ESPN and those channels. Like I was one of those kids that had 4 channels growing up. And so when you were watching sports coverage, it was Bob Neumeier. And it was just so cool to see him. And he's a guy that you've only heard good things about. And then you get a chance to meet him. And it was all true. Super nice guy, super friendly. And somebody who also, I'm not a horse racing guy, but I could listen to him talk about horse racing for hours because he made it sound really, really interesting. And whether he was on TV, whether he was on the radio, whether he was doing national stuff, like he was great. I loved watching and listening to him. He was a true legend.
So I've had a lot of interaction with Neumi over the years, a lot. In fact, if you go all the way back, and this would have been 2002 maybe, so right?
I think 02 to 05 was when he was doing the show here with Dale.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know, so I know he was still working at Channel 4, mm-hmm. right? Because the very first sports final that I ever did, I drove my ex-wife's Honda up here
nice.
And got hit from behind coming out of the tunnel.
Of course.
And the car sped off.
No, it right? didn't run.
So yeah, I had heat yeah. for that.
Yeah, well.
I got to Channel 4. I called them and said, hey, man, I wrecked the car. And they were like, you know, if you can make it in, fine. If not, damn it, I was getting in there because it was sports final. And I thought it was Lobel, and it was Neumi. So it's the first time I meet Neumi. And if you'd ever met Bob Neumeier, you know, I kind of joke on this. Well, how are you? You know, Neumi had this just way of talking that made you think, okay, is this guy like a multimillionaire who's like a, like a Joe Bottomtooth and Family Guy or something like that? But he was the most just normal guy. And I remember I was a skosh nervous. I was only like 25 then. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, all right, calm down. Here you go. Here's what we're going to do. And it was boom, boom, boom. And it was great. I worked with him a little bit, obviously, like you did in NBC Sports Boston. Mm-hmm. And in talking, I mean, for those who don't know, Bob Neumeier was a world championship handicapper. And it didn't matter whether it was horse racing or football. Neumie knew his stuff. When you went to him and talked betting, it was a different level, even for those of us that were in the degenerati.
Mm-hmm.
But I also did, in 2010, I did a test show at the other place.
Okay.
So when I come up from Sirius,
yeah,
right,
yeah, yep.
I'm kind of like weekend guy. They're waiting to see what they're going to do with me. And the existing morning show was in, you know, I think they were either negotiating or whatever, and they put me and Neumie in for 2 days to do the morning. And there was, without going too deep into detail, there was a guest forced on us that just sucked. It was awful.
Well,
it was a terrible programming decision. This is like 2010. And we get done, and Neumie looked at the person who was responsible for that and was basically like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah!
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, maybe I didn't realize what I was cheering for at the time. However,
said that, but
in doing 8 hours of radio with Neumie, it was just like, let's do this or let's do that. Or if I say, you know, Neumie, can we talk about this for football or gambling or whatever? And he was just like, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
He was on it. One of the truly nice guys.
I was going to say,
well,
like legit, and again, from my just brief interactions, but also talking to people that knew him a lot better, kind of what you see is what you get. Like, kind of the personality that comes across on
he
TV
no
or on the radio.
Yep.
And is also very similar. And
believed in himself, too. Like, I know that he left WEEI in a very publicized way.
Mm-hmm.
And then was just like, okay. And got a job on national television.
Yep.
And
you'd see him on the Olympics. You'd see him, obviously, on the Triple Crown stuff. But you'd see him all over the place. And fair to say, a lot of people between the radio and TV business, very, very few are unanimously liked.
Oh,
I would argue you and I are not on that list,
no
but there
question.
Are plenty. There's a very, very small few that no matter who you talk to, and it can be off air, it can be behind the scenes, and they would still say, like, he was a great, great guy.
And I think for some people, they forget that for a chunk of time, Neumie was the radio voice of the Boston Bruins.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
And in fact, you know, because I know Dave Gosher, who's now out in Vegas doing the TV call for the Knights, but we know Dave Gosher was a longtime radio voice of the Bees. Neumie was very supportive in that, and Ghosh coming up from Providence to be able to get into Boston.
He did Whalers, too, like way back in the way back.
He created, supposedly, Brass Bonanza. As people in Hartford are still playing that, hoping the team comes back someday.
That's a good song.
But,
I like it.
I mean, Neumie was a legend, and I know he was in failing health for a while. They mentioned that he had a stroke, and just a wonderful guy. I know he worked with Dale for a long time. He worked here. He's with the Bruins. He worked, you know, he touched a lot of people, let's put it that way. And God rest Neumie. And, no, the Bruins had their weekend, and I know we're out of time here to kind of get into it. We can do it towards the end of the show, but I encourage you to go read Scott McLaughlin's pieces on WEEI.com. He's been covering the Bruins pillar to post, and God rest Neumie. Coming up, the Patriots win. Mac is racking up the stats. The lunchtime hour of Gresh and Keefe next.